Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. During this broadcast, if you would like to make any comments, you can call in at area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that call-in number for you, area code 646-716-4893. Or you can email me at bonk@aol.com. I'll repeat that for you, bonkaye@aol.com. And I'd like to welcome all of you here on this holiday weekend. I'm waiting for my guest to show up, and while we're waiting, I would like to play a song for you that reminds me of all of our straight wives, and it's a Beatles song. I played it once before, but it's such a beautiful song that once again reminds me about straight wives. So let's take a listen to Blackbird. One moment.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the line of a dark black night. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Well, thank you so much for listening to that song, because I do think it exemplifies straight wives, that we are now spreading our wings and flying and waiting for that moment to arrive, which hopefully this is my wonderful friend, Wendy, from Wendy's List. Hold on one moment. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am great. I've
Welcome.
Had both kids home this week.
Well, that was a nice treat, right?
Yes, definitely.
That doesn't happen too often.
No, not at all.
So that kept you nice and busy. So I'm really glad that you were able to join us tonight, because everybody's really excited that you're joining us, because whenever you're on the show, people always feel so much better. They have something to look forward to. And yes, especially me, Wendy, because whenever you're on here, I always feel so much better when you're done, because I learn so much from you. And
I appreciate that.
Wendy, could you first Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to ask you if you could first talk a little bit about yourself before we go on to everything that you do.
Sure. I was just going to say that, you know, the last three or four shows you've had, all these people with websites and books and PhDs, and I am none of those things. But I have been there, and I have walked through it, and I'm now on the other side. So I never dreamed I would get to the other side. If it weren't for you, Bonnie, I would not have made it.
I think you would have. I maybe just made it a little quicker this way.
Well, the first thing, the most important thing, is when I found you, I had no clue that a gay man would marry a woman. I had no clue that that would happen. And so when it happened to me, and I found you, and I found out that I was not the only one in the world, which is what I felt like, that was huge. That was huge to see that, okay, you're not an idiot. You know, this does happen. And you offered a lot of support and a lot of advice and a lot of inspiration to help me realize that I, you know, this is not what I asked for, what I ever dreamed would happen, but somehow I would get through it. And, you know, it wasn't, you were not Pollyanna and it's all going to be wonderful and it's all, you know, all going to be great. You told me it's going to be hard, it's going to be long, it's going to be rough, but you can do it. And that's what I needed to hear. So that was the start. And that
going
was 6
back
years
to that.
Ago.
Going back to that comment that you just made, Wendy,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in the process of trying to finish up our new book, Gay Husbands Say the Darndest Things,
mm-hmm.
and this is a compilation of, you know, our women writing in and saying things that their husbands told them
mm-hmm.
that were the most incredible, ridiculous stories, but there's
mm-hmm.
such a pattern, you know, like I say, I think, you know, there must be a school of things that gay husbands, a school for gay husbands of, you know, things to tell their wives, because so many of these things are so similar.
Right.
And that they expect us to believe this. But, you know, in writing the, you know, beginning of this book, because, you know, in the beginning I'm trying to let women know that, just like you said, it's not that we were stupid, we just didn't understand. You
right.
know, this was something foreign to us, and
absolutely.
I grew up learning that gay means that somebody who wants the same sex.
Right.
It was never in the conversations that gay means somebody who marries you and wants somebody of the same sex.
Right.
I mean, that wasn't even in my you know, sphere of anything.
Right.
And I think I'm a little bit older than you, so I grew up, you know, in the 60s where everything
mm-hmm.
was anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
So you heard about people, you know, doing all kinds of experimentation. I remember when I was 17 years old and living in California, which was years advanced from the East Coast. You know, it was like culture
mm-hmm.
shock when I got out
right.
there.
Right.
And people were having sex orgies, and nobody thought anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way the times were. And even though, you know, I didn't participate, you know, it wasn't that I was judging anybody. It just wasn't right for me.
Right.
But it wasn't, like, unusual at all. You heard about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't occur to me that even if somebody had tried something,
mm-hmm.
that made them gay.
Right.
If they wanted to marry me and they loved me, then they tried it and they didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, how were they able to have sex with me if they were gay?
Right.
It just didn't equate. So I think that a lot of us blame ourselves and we're really hard on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some women who I work with and who are part of our support network, when, you know, we're being honest with each other and I tell them the truth, that if I had known that my ex-husband had past sexual experiences,
mm-hmm.
I definitely would not have stopped that from let that stop me from marrying him.
Right.
Because I honestly did believe if you tried it and you didn't like it, then, you know, that wasn't your cup of tea and that you're really straight.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have blamed myself for, you know, doing that. Somebody had warned me 2 weeks before I got married, they think that he's bisexual. And when I couldn't, you know, came to him and told him, and he was so angry, and he nearly threw over a table and said, "How dare somebody accuse me of that?" Okay, so I was very happy that he did that. But in my mind, once you plant a seed, then, you know, you just don't forget those kinds of things.
Right.
Which is why I always tell women when they say to me, "Well, if I tell another woman that he's gay, they're not going to believe me anyway." you know, if he goes with another woman after me. And I say, well, plant the seed anyway.
Right.
So that this way, I know what that planted seed did for me, that when it actually, when I was catching things, that all of a sudden it did make sense. But I think that, you know, one thing that we're so hard on ourselves, you know, when we go through this thinking, how couldn't we know? You know, we second guess ourselves all the time.
Right.
And, you know, I think that it's a learning process, but first we have to stop blaming ourselves for being misled.
Right.
And we have to stop blaming ourselves for being wonderful wives who didn't want to give up on these men. I think that's the next thing. Would you agree with that?
Right. And
because
for me,
you tried really hard for a long time.
Oh, very long. And there was absolutely not one clue. I mean, he, you know, I'd never heard of any past behavior. He had been engaged before. Not one of the stereotypical behaviors that you would think would, you know, would show. Nothing. And he was a teacher. He still is, you know, a good dresser, but I knew his mother was, you know, that was very important in their whole family to look nice all the time. And what's wrong with a man who wants to look nice? You know, that was okay with me. He was not flamboyant. He did not have a, you know, different kind of voice. He didn't have a different kind of walk. Nothing. And in fact, he had wonderful qualities. And he was a gentleman, and he was, seemed very genuinely interested in me. He was not aggressive, which I liked. We were very good on paper. We agreed with things politically, religiously, values, handling money. Everything was perfect. And I thought I was the luckiest person in the world. You know, I did not have a lot of experience. I was 27 years old when I met him. I had not dated much in college, a very low self-esteem, probably attributed to that. And so when he looked my way, I was there. I was taken, and just, you know, a fine, upstanding man. So when things started going south, I assumed that that was me, that I was didn't have experience, that I wasn't, you know, pretty enough or whatever. And I spent such a long time feeling so ashamed that my husband didn't want me. And I'm certainly not going to talk about that to anybody. Who on earth would talk to anybody about that? So I already felt bad enough about myself. And, you know, if I were, all you hear in the news is the opposite. So I must be some kind of freak because, you know, my husband doesn't want me. So it's got to be me. And, but then a part of me, said, you know, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong. And there was a piece of me that tried to confront him. And I, he was a very manipulative type of person that I, now looking back on it, I really see it. But I couldn't get a word in edgewise with him whenever I tried to bring something up like that. He would always twist it around to say, you know, what's wrong with you? It was very frustrating. So I wrote letters to him because that was the only way that I could get what I wanted to say down and get it across without being interrupted and without losing my train of thought. So, I saw, read magazines about marriage. I read books about marriage. I watched TV shows, you know, Oprah and Dr. Phil and all that stuff. And this never came up. This never came up that their husband didn't want the wife. That never came up. So, again, there must be something wrong with me. So he ignored the letters, and it tore me apart. He just ignored it, like, you know, there's nothing. I'm fine. I don't know what your problem is, you know. And he hardly even said that. It was just ignoring. And I have since learned that, you know, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. And that's how he treated me, with indifference. And I really spiraled down and became very depressed. I have depression in my past, so not unusual for that to happen, but I just wanted to die. I mean, there was nothing there was no reason to go on when you just feel so ashamed and so unwanted by your own husband. So,
yeah, was he aware of your depression during that time?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you expressed it to him how you felt?
Mm-hmm. And I have recently found some letters that I sent to him.
And yet,
I guess I grabbed
with all that,
there.
Knowing that he was causing this, you know, depression
this much pain
to resurface.
In me. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, he took his shame that, you know, he was not, it was not acceptable for him to be gay. He took that and that became, he became a workaholic. And he, and his, he's a band director in high school. And so winning and performing and, you know, working at the highest level and all that kind of stuff became his escape. And so, he was just so caught up in himself, and he became a narcissist over time, where just totally it's all about him, and he's the victim, and poor him, and, you know, he just couldn't see my point of view. Still can't. So, you know, I did get to the point where I was so suicidal that I had to quit working, and I had to go to, into therapy and medication and all that, and still nothing, still nothing. That was 2004. I didn't find anything on that computer until 2007.
Wow.
So
so you still had no clue what it was, right?
Right, and I was going to therapy for 2 years, and that never came up with a therapist. Now, I will, looking back, I will fault that therapist for not bringing it up because she knew, you know, what was going on at home, and not going on, I should say. And I have told doctors since then that you need to bring this up because it would have at least given me something to look at or, you know, to realize that it wasn't me. So anyway, when my son was 16, I was checking the computer to make sure he wasn't doing anything he wasn't supposed to be doing. That was back in the day when we all had one family computer and everybody was all worried about, you know, this thing called the Internet and, you know, watch what your kids are doing. And so I was checking the history on the Internet and all these gay porn websites came up before me. I was just stunned. Stunned. And at the time, my son had a girlfriend, so I really didn't think it was him. So the next night, I made sure that he did not get on the computer, and I checked the history again, and sure enough, there it was again. So I knew who was doing it.
Uh-huh.
And I, boy, talk about mixed feelings when you see that.
Were you prepared for it at that point when you saw it?
No.
You still weren't
no
prepared,
clue.
Right?
No clue. Mm. None. But when I saw it, it did make sense. Okay, this is the reason why he doesn't want me. And that was a relief. Prior to that, I had thought this. I started reading all about work addiction, and I thought, okay, this is the reason he's so caught up in himself and all that. And so that was kind of a relief then that, okay, it's not me. And so he was all into reading about workaholism because he knew that was getting it off of him, and he was happy to have workaholism be the problem. So when I saw that, I was somewhat relieved, but mostly in shock. I did not know, as I said earlier, that this could ever happen. I was just, what is this? So I typed into Google, I said, gay husband. That's all I typed. I'm like, what is this? And that's when your site came up, and then I started, you know, the rest is history, as they say. I started realizing that this does happen. And I found the Straight Spouse Network, and they started talking about how some couples stay together, you know, in spite of this. And it just, I don't know what was in me, but there was no way I was staying together.
Mm-hmm.
And although I was scared to death. I had, by that point, because of my illness, I wasn't working. I was working in just in a much less demand. I was a teacher. I had been a teacher, and then I became a secretary. That was all I could handle emotionally. So I was making half the money. And the marriage obviously had deteriorated over many years. I was married 22 years when I found the computer. And I confronted him the next day. He denied it. He said he didn't know anything about history, apparently. And, you know, no, I can tell you what website that was on. I said, no, I know. And then he tried to put it on my son. I said, no. And it took days for him to, I just kept saying, what is going on? And I understand you're upset. I said, but, you know, I want an answer. You need to come clean with me. And finally he wrote me a quasi letter, sort of a confession, but I've read it since, and it was just kind of a, you know, poor me, and I my poor upbringing, and poor this, and poor that. And never I'm sorry, never,
right.
You know, none of that. Now, I do agree with you, Bonnie, in that I think when he married me, I think he really thought that it was going to change him. I think he just hoped against hope that this would go away. And I do not know where in the 22 years it changed, but I think with this stuff, it's like a beach ball that they can't keep underwater anymore. And he just...
Well, you know, I came up with a new thought on this. In fact, I'm adding it to this book. And here's what I say. You know, this is what I'm writing here. I say, I tell women that when gay men marry you, in almost all cases, they do love you.
Mm-hmm.
But they love you to the best of their abilities to love as gay men.
Correct.
And that's the whole thing that I've, you know, figured out.
Yeah.
And there is a major difference between gay love and straight love from a man.
Mm-hmm.
And you can ask any woman who's been with both, and they'll tell you that. And I said, gay men are visitors in a marriage rather than participants.
Yep.
They do what they have to do in order to get by and not raise the red flags and wave them in your face.
Mm-hmm.
But trust me, it is an act. It all
mm-hmm.
comes down to how long the show can go on before they get tired of playing the role.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. You know, they do love you the best that they can love you as gay men.
Mm-hmm.
But we're basing our marriages on being married to a straight man.
Right.
So when they react to us, we don't know that they're gay.
Right.
And the things they say to us, we personalize because they're the men that we love.
Right.
But they can't respond to us as straight men because they're gay men. They wouldn't know how. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, Wendy. I know if we lived in a different kind of society, you know, and I'm born to, you know, and I'm a heterosexual woman, maybe I could pretend to love another woman. I wouldn't really
mm-hmm.
know how to do it in a way
mm-hmm.
that would be meaningful
mm-hmm.
to her because it's
yes.
not who I am.
Absolutely. I've heard you say that before, and I totally agree with that. When I put myself in that position, I can't imagine how weird that would be, how hard that would be. I don't know. I don't think I could do it. But when you're in a society where society tells you you better be this way or you're going to be the laughing stock of whatever, then that's a little motivation to make it work. He had very judgmental parents.
And I do understand it, you know,
mm-hmm.
to a point.
Yes. Yes, I do.
But the point changes to me when they turn it around and blame you.
Yep.
You know, this. I mean, at least if they could accept responsibility and say, look, I tried my best, I screwed
mm-hmm.
up.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be the husband you need, but I can't because I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
But that hardly ever happens. I mean,
right.
it happens so rarely that these men can be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I even have a friend, you know, on the West Coast, and I said to him, you know, did you tell your wife you're gay? He says, well, I don't have to tell her, she knows. I said, well, how does she know? I said, if you don't tell her, how do you
yeah.
know she knows? Well, she just knows. That's not good enough.
Right.
But, you
right.
know, they're cowards. They don't want to say anything.
Absolutely, and he still is that way. And, that you know, that's the part that was so hard to recover from for me was his total ignoring me in my suffering and his inability to see my side and to, you know, because that's what your husband's supposed to be. And,
right.
And his not being honest with me when I was begging him to tell me what was wrong. And he's, to this day, will not, you know, go there. So I got to the point, and I will say, he never blamed me. He never said an ugly thing about me, ever. He never criticized me. He, you know, that's what almost made it worse, because I kept thinking, I can't leave this marriage. He's not being bad to me. But why am I so miserable? You know, it was so confusing for me. So confusing, because on paper and in public, it was all normal. It was all wonderful. You know, we went on family trips. He was, I would say, courteous to me, you know, never ugly, never violent, always had the kids supporting me. So what am I supposed to do? I married him for better or for worse. I was not happy, but there wasn't enough to warrant it, dissolving a wedding vow. So that was that's why I stayed, I think, because he had this addiction problem with working, you know. That was a illness, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health. So I really, it was just such a strain, because I was so, so miserable, but there really wasn't anything to show why I was so miserable, and nobody else would ever believe me that I was miserable. You know, and that's the angst that was just the turmoil in my, and that's what put me into my depression and stuff. So at one point, I thought, you know, so for me to get mad at him or scream at him, that would not have done any good. One thing I did think maybe I could try was, okay, I'm going to ignore him. I'm going to, you know, do the silent treatment just like he does with me. I'm going to not be interested in him. I'm going to let him see what it's like to have a spouse who's not interested in you. And surely, once he sees how awful that is, to have a spouse not interested in him, he will go, oh, wow, I didn't realize I was doing this to you. I'm sorry. So that was my plan. Well, that didn't work.
He's very grateful.
Pardon me?
He's probably very grateful.
Yeah, because it got him off the hook. I wasn't bugging him anymore. I wasn't pleading with him anymore. Yeah, it worked the opposite. And so that's when it all started. I started reading about narcissism, and I started realizing that there really are human beings like this, who are just so oblivious to anybody else's needs. And the root of that narcissism is shame, and which seems opposite. Why would somebody be full of himself if they're ashamed? They act the opposite. They act arrogant. But the root of it is shame. And I know that his parents would never have permitted him to be who he was. And so he was ashamed of that. They're constantly criticizing him, even as an adult, and demanding him perfection from him. So once I started learning about that, I was able to detach a little bit more and realize, you know, this man, there's no way I can have a relationship with this man. And so that helped me to realize to quit trying, and that was the start. And, you know, I've said that before, the first thing you can do when you find yourself in a hole is to quit digging deeper. And that's what I had to do. And so I moved. I told him I did not know how I was going to do this. I was scared to death, but I knew I was not going to continue modeling this marriage for my children, because it was not a marriage. We were miserable. And he was always sick all the time, and everything was stress, and everything was, you know, it was just always drama. So we were always having to, you know, he was always in crisis, and we were always running to help him. And so, you know, I did not want my daughter to see me putting up with that. I did not want my son to be seeing that this is what a marriage is like. So, you know, I was listening to your show today from when you had Kimberly Brooks, and she was saying how difficult it is when there are children involved, It just adds a whole nother layer, and you know how hard that is because you have to keep moving forward, and you know you can't take care of yourself because you got these children you have to be take care of. But I will say, if it weren't for my kids, I wouldn't have made it, because it was my children that I wanted to be better for, and I did not want them to see that this was what a marriage was. So if it hadn't been for them, I think I wouldn't have gotten out of my hole. That was my drive, that my children need to see something better than this. I wasn't caring about myself yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing it because my kids did not need to see this misery anymore. And it was not a normal marriage, and I was not going to put it. So I don't know where that little piece came inside of me, that courage. But I told him, you know, we're not going to stay married. And he was okay with that right away. So, and I went into therapy, a different therapist, to talk about all of this. And my question was, how long did he, you know, is this all new to him that he's exploring all this, or is this something that he's been acting on or, known for a while? And so he did go to therapy with me, or by himself, to the same therapist right away. I made him go, and he was okay with going. And my therapist after that session couldn't tell me a whole lot, but he did make it clear to me that he was not questioning things, that he knew who he was. And that shocked me, because I thought he was just, you know, maybe I am, maybe I'm not. But it was, he said, no, it's very clear. So that's when going.
And, you know, once again, I'm sure it was always very clear, Wendy, but he had to do the right thing for himself, not
right.
for you, but for himself.
Of course, yes. And
always you were an
be
easy
way.
Lure to lure in, because, you know, you wanted to get married.
Mm-hmm.
You were, and you were very, you know, willing, giving participant.
My biological clock was ticking.
Mm-hmm.
And he was good for me. I mean, I thought, but it went downhill very quickly. Very quickly. And
right,
I just chalked it up to, we were inexperienced. We, you know, didn't, you know, it would get better. It would get better. It would get better. I cannot tell you how many times I just kept thinking it's going to get better because he's such a good man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so
alike.
And that's
where the problem comes in with so many women. You know, they have these great guys,
yep.
you know, to the outside world.
Well
so
respected.
They,
oh. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, everybody else can see him through those eyes. You know, what's wrong
mm-hmm.
with you?
Mm-hmm. And,
why are you,
you
making
know,
such demands?
Part of this, you know, part of this demise, there, I know we say a lot that this wasn't our fault. And for the most part, it wasn't. And that's the part that makes it so hard to recover from. But, you know, if I can be honest with myself, I let this go on, this. Not him being gay, but this whole narcissism stuff, I bought into it. I enabled him. I was, you know, I was riding on his coattails because I had such poor self-esteem.
Uh-huh.
So I got totally caught up in him, and then it became toxic because he began controlling me, and I didn't realize it. So I did start reading, I forget her first name, Beatty, Codependent No More. That was a very
mm-hmm.
helpful book for me, because it taught you how you can still love somebody, but you have to detach from them to get your own self back. And that was a big turning point for me to realize that what I had really been doing, and that I was getting caught up in him and then letting that toxicity strangle me, really. Entangle me. So it's a lot of factors go into all of this.
There are, but I do
want
to say one thing, Wendy, that a lot
mm-hmm.
of times women like you, you
mm-hmm.
know, look back and they say that, you know, I stayed in there, I stayed too long. But I think there's a lot of extenuating circumstances
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have children, it's
Absolutely.
Not so easy to just walk away.
Absolutely.
And you know, especially when there's financial constraints,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and
oh, yeah.
especially when there's doubts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're not quite sure.
And I didn't quite have a definitive reason to justify
mm-hmm.
it.
You know, he got married in the church. You know, he remembers you were part of a church community.
I had taken a very solemn vow.
Mm-hmm.
How was I going to explain to somebody that there really was a legitimate reason to divorce? Now, the other thing that helped kept me from walking away before, this is before I knew, was I knew that if we were divorced and he would have the kids one weekend and I would have them, you know, I knew he would not, he would bail on them because he was so reliably unreliable. So I didn't want to put my kids through that. And so, you know, I did put up with a lot.
Not only that,
for that
but you weren't in the best, you weren't in the best mental shape when this was going on.
Exactly.
You were going through
and
depression.
And I had totally lost who I was. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
I lived for my family. You know, what I wanted was not even in the picture. But I was okay with that, you know, at the time. Because I didn't know. I wasn't mentally healthy. So,
and, you know, when you're not mentally healthy, it's so easy to get beaten down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I often say the best thing my ex-husband ever did for me was walk out that door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he walked out in a fit of anger to teach me a lesson, thinking if he would leave me for a week, I would fall apart and not be able to ever, you know, question him again and just accept him and accept his ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so beaten down that the minute he walked out that door, you know, of course I was able to start building up my strength again.
Mm-hmm.
But if he hadn't walked out, Wendy, who knows if I would have ever left, because the longer you stay in these marriages, the more beaten down you get.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, they like to beat you down to shut you up, you know, or just keep you down there.
Yeah, or confuse
you. That way they don't have to be accountable.
You know, and, you know, I've said that now. Of course, now I'm 6 years out. Six whole years out. But had I not found that stuff on the computer, I don't know where I would have been, would be today. I know I certainly would not be as healthy as I am today. So I know a lot of people who are just here, you know, just finding out, just very raw, that is the last thing you want to hear from me, saying I was lucky I found that on the computer. But you got to realize that I'm way on the other side. But really, and I, you know, I don't know how many of your listeners have listened to me over the years, but I mean, if you had known me 6 years ago and said this is what I was going to be like in 6 years, you know, it would have been ridiculous. There's no way. But because of walking through this, finding support, finding and getting healthy again, you know, it has been worth it. You know, and for those of you who have not listened to the story, just one other little piece to this was 3-4 months after we decided to divorce at the end of the school year, my therapist said that we needed to start planting the seeds to tell the children we were going to divorce so that they wouldn't be totally shocked to them. And so he wouldn't tell them. He didn't want to be in that conversation. So I had to do that myself. And one was in college, one was home, so I had to do that myself. And then shortly thereafter, and we didn't tell them everything, I decided it would be way too much for my kids to handle, divorce and gay. That was just too much, and I could hardly handle it, so I knew they couldn't. So about a month after we told them that, we were just going to get divorced, he showed up. He ended up not coming home one night, which was not uncommon, but he ended up calling me at 10:30 at night from the county jail. And this was just surreal. And he had gone to another county and gotten himself arrested at a roadside park. And prior to that, he had been missing sometimes, taking longer to come home from trips and things like that, but I never knew of any, you know, anything specific. And when this happened, you know, that was just like hitting below the belt. And it was awful. My son was in his band program, and I had to go bail him out of jail, and it was just awful. He ended up being put on administrative leave with his job, and it was then he started dipping into our money to pay for a civil lawyer and a criminal lawyer, civil lawyer to keep his job. At that time, the policies were a little vague, so he could still be employed because he hadn't done anything with any students or hadn't been involved in a school activity, so he really fought all that. So then I had to accelerate filing for divorce because he was dipping into the money. And in looking back now, that probably was a good thing, too, because it forced me to do it. It just put me to the point where you better do this, you're not going to have any money left. So in a way, that was what I needed to push me forward. But that was awful. That was hell that he put us through. And that was it. So we were divorced, but the divorce process, I couldn't. My lawyer advised me to stay in the marriage because we didn't know what was going to happen with his job. And financially, I needed to, you know, we needed to have him draw income. So I put up with a lot, probably another 6-8 months. Finally had him leave. And then the hurricane hit, and I had major house repairs I had to deal with. So that was the beginning of realizing you're stronger than you think you are.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
Right, but as my therapist said, sometimes you get really tired of being strong. Another thing that maybe this will help somebody out there, because it helped me, when this whole arrest thing happened, and what am I going to tell my son? And, you know, it was just awful. And he said, you know what? You know how people tell you that God only gives you what you can handle? I said, yes. He said, well, sometimes he gives you too much. And when he told me that, I cannot tell you how much better I felt. Because when you're going in the middle of all of that, you do not want someone to tell you, oh, you're so strong, you're just going to come through. You don't want to hear that. You want someone to hear your side and to acknowledge what you're going through is way more than what anybody else should ever have to go through. And that really was powerful to me. And that's when I'm trying to help other people now to realize that to encourage somebody is not necessarily to say it's all going to be wonderful, just to acknowledge that what you're going through is awful. And it is awful because I've been through that. So anyway, that's just one little piece of something that even if the therapist can tell you that.
No, I think that's so important, right? And I think that acknowledgement of that. And, you know, it's funny, in our chat rooms recently, because we, you know, chat 3 times a week from our regular, you know, Straight Wives Club group, and on Facebook also posting. You know, I've really come, it's taken me nearly 30 years now to come to this conclusion. My only concern is giving support to the women going through this.
Right.
You know, I don't feel we have to defend ourselves to the media. I don't feel that we have to be, you know, sensational hit every time some gay man comes out who's married. And that we have to all get into this forum and arena to have to, you know, tell our sides of the story. You know, the straight wife and the gay husband. You know, I realize now that people don't want to hear what we have to say. You know, they don't have the correct empathy. I guess that's the word that I would have to use.
Right.
And they may have sympathy, but sympathy sometimes turns into pity.
Mm-hmm.
Pity comes into resentment. And I think that's why people don't look at us as victims. They look at us as allowing ourselves to be victimized, which puts us in a weak position. And I'm not doing it anymore. I really only care about our women and our women feeling that they have support, that they can get through this, and they can move to the next step of their lives.
Yeah.
And you've been so instrumental in doing that. You know, I just wanted you to mention before we talk about your list a little bit how important it is to find support at our healing weekends.
Oh, my goodness.
This healing weekend turned out so beautifully. The first one was nice, but this one really started a movement in Houston going, right?
Oh, my goodness. It has been a beautiful thing. When I first knew you back in 2007, was when I found you, you did the retreat in Philadelphia, and I think you did one in Florida. And I remember thinking, you know, there's no way I could afford that to come because I live in Texas. There's no way. And I tried to imagine what that was like, and then I also thought, you know what, I'd probably be too chicken to go anyway because, you know, how would I tell anybody where I was going and all that? And then, out of the blue, you said you were coming to Texas, and I thought, wow, this is so wonderful. But I still was very, very nervous, very nervous. Who's going to see me? They're going to, I'm going to bump into a friend. They're going to say, what are you doing here? You know, I was so, because, you know, we go from the shame of,
right,
of being married to somebody who doesn't want us to the shame of being married to somebody who's gay. How on earth does that happen? To the, you know, to that shame of how am I going to face other people and tell, you know, this is a shameful thing because nobody does it. So, but when I walked, we had that dinner the first night, and I start hearing people talking out loud about this because this has all been just in my mind before, and reading things, you know, it was just kind of amazing. And then when people start sharing their stories, and I was struck by how every single one of these women is smart, strong, amazing, articulate women. I just couldn't get over that. And then when we met again this year, it just really, it just was amazing. And I think, you know, the format is just really sharing your story, and it sounds so scary. But once you get in there and it is just tremendous how respectful everybody is of everybody's story. Nobody interrupts anybody. Nobody questions anybody. Nobody makes judgment. Everybody accepts everything you're saying.
And it's very validating because you don't even have to explain anything.
Right.
And even though we come from different parts of the country or even the mm-hmm. world, you know, and even though every one of us has a different story, the emotional impact is the
mm-hmm.
same for every woman
mm-hmm.
who lives this experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really don't think that you can understand it unless you live it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to, you know, put anybody down, but it's just like
mm-hmm.
I can't feel what other women are feeling who go through domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
I can be sympathetic and understanding,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
I don't understand it, and I haven't lived it.
Right.
So I can show understand, you know,
mm-hmm.
I can show concern and empathy, you know, sympathy, maybe not even
mm-hmm.
empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with us. You know, like I said,
right.
we are a unique group. We have unique circumstances, unique
mm-hmm.
emotional feelings. And even though it is similar to, you know, other codependent situations, nothing's the same as living it.
Right.
So I think that's why it's so important for women to bond on this. And you really had a wonderful experience this year of having some really dynamic, exciting women,
right.
you
and
know,
the other
who are
part
able to
that,
form friendships here.
Yeah, and the other part to that, you know, hearing everybody else and realizing you're not alone, that's a huge part of it. And these are all real, you know, real people that are not dummies, and you know, that you think you are for not realizing. You realize, you know, I wasn't so dumb. These other people figured this, didn't know this either. The other part of it is telling your story out loud. And I remember the first time I told it out. I mean, you know, I told you in emails back and forth for years, but to say it out loud is totally different. And for me, that was a huge part of my healing, to say what happened to me out loud is to acknowledge it. And you can't heal from something until you acknowledge what it is you're trying to heal from. And to verbalize that out loud in a safe environment is tremendous. And so I remember two or three women, you know, I won't say names, but, you know, just really kind of falling apart as they're telling their story, and they were so embarrassed about it. But as some of you said, this is the first time you've said this out loud, and this is very, very powerful stuff, but it's so, so important to do that. So important to do that. So, yes, luckily, four or five of us were all from Houston, and in fact, one just lives 20 minutes away from me. It was just tremendous. So we have been meeting about every other week, some
uh-huh.
just two of us, some just three of us, some six of us, and it has been just wonderful. And, you know, really, for the last couple of years, I had kind of felt like I had moved on. I was not really, you know, in the throes of everything, and I was kind of moving away from being so involved. And I learned from this that I still had my own healing to do. I'm on a different place, but there's still much that I need to do. So,
I think there's a lot of residual scarring that women don't realize.
Yes.
And that's why I say, you know, women said to me, like even tonight on the chat room, they were saying, well, how long does it take to heal? Well, you know, you can be healed, but the scabs are still there. You know, I don't think they ever go away. You're constantly reminded about different things, and especially if you have children, and especially if you have an ex-husband who's being a jerk.
It's many, many layers, many facets. And as you heal from one thing, then something else you realize gets uncovered. And it's just a very complex thing. Now, for me, therapy helped me just put one foot in front of the other when I was going through such trauma. It is a trauma. And that helped me just stay above water. Because I didn't have any support. I did not know anybody until a year ago. So therapy was crucial for me to have somebody validate what I was going through. He didn't really totally, you know, he hadn't been through it, but he at least let me talk about it. And in talking in therapy is, I guess, was my start. But to say it in front of other women out loud is tremendously healing. But anyway, I think having support and telling your story each time, and then you had me on the show, you know, each time I told it, I was getting stronger and owning it and okay, this is what happened to me. Now I need to move forward in a more positive way. And so then I did write my story in the book, Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Part 2. That was huge. That was another therapeutic moment for me to get all of that in writing. And then I just did a lot of writing. A lot of my emotional stuff I wrote. I wrote, and I never thought it would ever see the light of day, but it was how I could get it out. Otherwise, I was just going to explode. Now, I didn't get real angry. I just got very depressed. Everybody has a different kind of reaction, you know. But
well, your writing has really been inspiring to so many women. And by the way, we just had an email from our little Debbie in Texas saying,
oh,
great
Debbie.
Show, love you both. Wendy, thanks for telling your story again. I know it isn't easy. And we love you, Debbie. Yeah, and we miss you, Debbie.
Yes, I met her the first year, and then she came back. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I love Debbie. She's like my own little personal daughter.
Talk about a story. Talk about a wonderful woman coping with so much. My goodness.
What I love about our women. You know, they're just so supportive, and they're just so helpful to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that... in your recent writings, you know, that you've had, I mean, you have a lot of them, but I told some women tonight that I really wanted to talk a little bit about some of your more hopeful ones.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last newsletter I have, and by the way, if you want any of Wendy's writings, you know, just write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you her list. But you have the one I put in there, Spiraling Down.
Yes.
And I'll read this, if you don't mind.
And
just to give people some of the emotional impact, because some of this really hit me very strong. But it says, when your husband doesn't want you, you don't notice it so much. You make excuses outside yourself, not wanting to face the truth. It's demanding work. He's so stressed right now. The timing just isn't right. When your husband doesn't want you, you try to please him so. Notes and balloons, well-planned meals, never a complaint. When your husband doesn't want you, week after week, month after month, rejection becomes too much. The years slip by painfully, and the tears begin to shed. When your husband doesn't want you, you wonder all the time, is he having an affair? Is he gay? Or is it just me? When your husband doesn't want you, you start to wither away. Your heart turns hard. Your soul turns cold. You're paralyzed with fear. When your husband doesn't want you, You look for a way out, a diversion, a plan to escape. The pressing pain, sleep worked once, but no more, the dreams disturb the mind. When your husband doesn't want you, after all these years, you ultimately realize it's you. So lifeless, repulsive, and cold, the hole is too deep to ignore, or to climb out of now. You curl up and rot away, hoping for a blanket of dirt. And that was just to me, and he wrote that these words scribbled into a steno book years ago are not dated, but it's safe to say they came to me while in the midst of major depression. I knew not what was to come, the discovery that my husband was gay. I find it interesting that gay is mentioned here, perhaps out of sheer desperation to make sense of it all. Did you find that odd, Wendy?
Yeah, I did. Well, I just found this maybe a few months ago in some stuff just stashed away, and I was shocked that was there.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny, too, that even though you said you were totally shocked,
I was grasping at straws of what, there's got to be a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing I could think of, that why a man wouldn't want a woman, you know. But it was certainly really didn't think it was true.
Mm-hmm. Well, recently then you wrote Spiraling Up, so I'll go through that one.
Yeah, after I sent that to you, I thought, you know, this is pretty heavy, this is pretty bad, this is pretty awful, but it was, you know, it was my truth at the time, and I thought, you know what, I think I need to do something more positive. So I said, I remember sending you an email, so maybe I need to do something about spiraling up. And it kind of came to me pretty quickly, actually. Once you start, now granted, I have come through a lot already, but I started realizing how gradually you start recovering. And so that's when I came up with the next one, spiraling up.
Okay, so this one says, when you leave your gay husband, that's what each, you know, heading is, when you leave your gay husband, you know you did the right thing, but the waters seem uncharted. Where is the map for this tragic journey that you did not choose? When you leave your gay husband, you wrestle with telling the truth. How can I explain the real reason? What will they say? No one gets your inner turmoil and fear of discovery. When you leave your gay husband, sometimes you want to go back. At times, the known seems more bearable than what lies ahead for you alone. When you leave your gay husband, you search and find support among the many women and find that you're not alone after all. When you leave your gay husband, you grieve the losses, the illusion of marriage, the family unit for your kids, and the happily ever after together. When you leave your gay husband, you go over your past and wonder about your future. Will I ever trust another man or trust myself to find one? When you leave your gay husband, you learn to survive, stand on your own somehow. You accept that life has changed and adjust to your new normal. When you leave your gay husband, the healing begins. The shock is over, the anger fades. You've trudged through the muck toward a better life at last. And you wrote there, the decision to divorce my gay husband came easily, though I had no clue what would be involved, how on earth I would find the strength and the resources to do it, and how complex the recovery process would be. I now know that it was worth every step.
Yep.
So that was your next list, right?
Yep. That was in the process of going through and getting... peeling him off, as they say, as I kind of have said, it takes so long to peel him off of you because it was 23 years, you know.
Well, then you have Finally There, and that's like I told women that I wanted to really for them to listen to this because so many of them, you know, are going through the process and they don't see a light anywhere close by.
Right.
And, you know, they don't even see a tunnel for the light to be there at the end of it.
Right.
So, and I tell them that, you know, this is going to change everything now, Wendy,
when I read this, right? I hope. I wish I could wave a wand and everything would go away, but.
Well, that's okay. I'll read this.
We have to walk through it.
This should work. Okay, when your gay husband is finally gone, you can breathe. No tension, no pretending. The toxicity dissipates. When your gay husband is finally gone, there is time, sometimes too much, but now it's for you. What do I want? What do I like? What's next for me? When your gay husband is finally gone, there is quiet, sometimes too much, but now there is peace. The noise of manipulative dialogue is over. The stillness brings relief. When your gay husband is finally gone, there are new choices, sometimes too many, but you direct your own life, choose which way to go, decide what you enjoy. When your gay husband is finally gone, there is freedom. Sometimes you rattle around a bit, but you can discover new dreams, see what you want to see, unlock doors to the unknown treasure. When your gay husband is finally gone, there is empowerment. Sometimes you're in charge of too much, but finally the director of your own show, finding strength within to lead your new self on your new journey. And I think that's leaving things with such a wonderful, positive, you know, uplifting feeling.
Well, I hope so. You know, I remember times, though, when I was teaching and buried in grading papers and all kinds of things, and that was pretty overwhelming, and going home to children, you know, the last thing I wanted to hear was little Mary Sunshine telling me to put my chin up. But, and so, I you know, if this hits you wrong, that's okay. I understand that some of you are at this point where you never believe it's ever going to, you know, you just can't believe you're going to get through it. And I was talking to, I was messaging my new friend Patty about this, saying that, you know, I've really come so far that I don't, you know, I'm afraid people are going to think that I don't know their pain because I'm now more positive, I'm happier, I'm more whole, I'm more authentic, whatever, all these things. But let me tell you, I never dreamed I would get to this point. And those naysayers that are out there, which I know there are, and that's very, very normal, I think, because some of you are in the thick of it, and it's bad. And some of you have it way worse than I did. I will say that. My heart goes out to you that some of you that are going through verbal abuse and physical abuse and people telling you you're crazy and turning your kids against you and, you know, such horrible, horrible things are happening out there. My heart goes out to you, and you must understand that you've got to find support and you've got to start facing forward, at least facing forward. I know there's a temptation to go back and, you know, bash him, get at him, be spiteful, hurt him, you know, focus on him because of what he did to you. But that's not healing. And somehow you've got to turn yourself toward yourself and heal yourself because, you know what, he doesn't care. That's what my feeling is. He doesn't care. And so I have got to care for myself, and that was a very foreign thing for me because I did not grow up caring for myself. I never had a good self-concept. I never felt valuable or worthy. And, you know, dare I say it's a good thing this happened to me. You know, that sounds awful, I know. But truly, I'm at that point where some good things have come out of this for me. And I have gotten stronger, but not by myself, but because of a whole lot of people who care about me now that I have discovered. You know, I've met now 30 women that have gone through this.
Wow.
And that in person, you know, I know
mm-hmm.
them by name. And that has really, really held me up. When you think about 30 people holding you up, that's tremendous. Now, I will say, Bonnie, I know you say you don't want to go out into the world and tell our story, but I'm getting a fire in my belly.
It's not that I don't want to tell our story. It's just I don't want to have to defend our position.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, we can tell our story, but we can tell it with our heads held high, not have
exactly.
to, you know,
that's
feel defensive about
finally
it.
Finally getting to that point. And I don't know if, you know, people know about my recovery map. That was one of the things as I recovered, I had to kind of sort out how I was feeling. One of the things where I am now, where I can say that this happened to me, not because of me. And when you can finally turn that around to not being feeling that you are responsible for it, or that, you know, and put it behind you, that this is the trauma that's in my journey. Everybody else has a trauma in their journeys. This was mine. And try to turn your mess into your message is what I'm trying to do in helping other people. And I, you know, there may come a time, because I want this not to happen to any more women. And we have got to get our society turned around so that this doesn't happen.
And I totally agree with you. And I think that one of the goals, you know, as I was mentioning on our show last week, this upcoming year, I'd like for us to become more politically active.
Mm-hmm.
I think until we have rights, then nobody's going to understand our case.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
one of the things that I'm going to be fighting for is, you know, his fault divorce.
Mm-hmm.
That if you marry a man who's gay, regardless mm-hmm. of the fact of anything, his trying or whatever, you know, it's not your fault that the marriage failed. And you shouldn't
mm-hmm.
feel at any point that you have to take responsibility for
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Nor should you have to pay money to get out of it.
Right.
Nor should you have to give up what's rightfully yours. You need to keep
right.
it. You know,
right.
you've had your life swiped from you. You don't have to have
mm-hmm.
all of your life savings at the same time.
Right.
So I think that, you know, we have to take a stronger position and not be, you know, like I say, amongst ourselves, we can cry, we can, you know, we can go through everything. But to
mm-hmm.
the public, I don't want to keep looking like victims, because people don't have
right.
respect for victims.
Right.
I want to be aggressive. I
absolutely. And
go out there and take back what's ours. I mean,
exactly.
I think that we'll feel better about it.
Exactly. And I am moving to that. I didn't say earlier, I have only told maybe three or four close friends going through all this, really the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with my colleagues for 6 years. They never knew what was going on. I just couldn't, because while I was most ashamed about it, I thought they're never going to understand how I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
How could you not have known? That was
mm-hmm.
the thing that I was so afraid that I couldn't answer. But you know what? In the last 6 months, these things that have been going on, I've noticed in the media and in the news, two things happen. Those the bombers in Boston. If you
mm-hmm.
watch carefully, the news media jumped on all those neighbors, relatives, schoolmates, everything else. How did you not know? How did you not know? You must have known. You must have known that they were going to bomb, that they were radical, that they were this, they were that. And the media just jumps on that, you know, they should have known. And that really struck me this year when I saw that. I'm like, this is exactly what would happen to us. How would you not know? And then the those girls who were kidnapped, you know, and they were entrapped for 10 years. What did the media do to that? They went to the neighbors. They went to all these people. How did you not know those people were in that house? You know, and I
mm-hmm.
thought, you know, that is our society. They can't understand that these things could happen. Things are not always as they seem. But I did, a couple weeks ago, I felt the calling or whatever to quote, come out to my colleagues. I have three women that I work with in my job.
Wow.
And I told them my complete story. I mean, obviously they knew I was divorced. They knew my ex-husband was a workaholic and all that. They weren't surprised. But I felt strong enough. And you know what I did? Because I knew they were going to say, well, how did you not know? Surely you knew. I answered the question before they asked it. I just said, you know what? You're probably going to think, how on earth would I not know? Well, let me tell you, there's 4 million women and da-da-da-da-da, and I told the whole story. But it took 6 years for me to get to that point. So those of you who think that it's going to be over next year, it's probably not. But it will be over eventually. So I feel
and I think,
stronger.
And also, I just want to mention also that I think what you said is so on target. You know, but I know there's a grieving period, there's an anger period, and there's a venting period.
Absolutely.
But eventually, that venting and that anger has to turn itself around.
Absolutely.
Into now it's time to do for me period.
Absolutely. And if you can't do it yourself, I went into therapy, I did, and that helped me turn around. And I know you were talking to Kimberly Brooks last week about, when a therapist doesn't work out for you.
Right.
That absolutely happened to me. My therapist called my husband in and said, this is, of course, before we knew the truth, you know, because I explained how my husband didn't want me, didn't care about me, didn't cherish me, and... Well, you know, you just need to take her out to eat more or take her out more. And I walked out of there saying, nope, this therapist does not get it. That is not going to cut it. And so I changed to another therapist. So I just wanted to put that in that does happen.
Absolutely. And it's so hard sometimes. I tell women the same thing, Wendy. You know, if you can't make a connection, you try a few times.
Yeah.
And if it's not connecting for you, move on.
Right.
And what I love about Kimberly Brooks, I'll be honest with you, I'm so excited she's part of our network now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I had to go to a therapist, I would definitely be going to her because mm-hmm. I think she's just so empathetic, so understanding. Mm-hmm. She lived through this herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have Francine Barbetta, you know, who's here in Pennsylvania, who's also very compassionate, very understanding. I have some wonderful mm-hmm. women therapists, and I have Dr. Brian Hooper. He'll be here with mm-hmm. us next week. And Brian also, even though he's a gay therapist, he's totally on target about men taking responsibility for what they've done, and he really does understand our women. So we're really blessed to have some excellent therapists who are part of this network.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't live near them, you can talk to them by phone or by, you know, Skyping.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than start with somebody who doesn't understand what you're going through, here you have three good therapists who can really work with you.
Yes. And, you know, I would say, you know, we've had some, I'm not exactly on the chat, but I'm hearing some things that, you know, just very, very, very upset women. And, you know, I would say if you can't get past that anger and that spitefulness, I would suggest, and I'm not a therapist, I'm just a regular person, but I really think if you're having trouble getting past that, to get some help, because you're just going to
keep spiraling
down.
Yeah, it's just hard a lot
down.
Of times when they're going
hard.
Through it and their husbands are just really making their lives miserable.
I
think it's okay if they vent in the chat room, because I'd rather them vent there than in front of their kids.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if your kids are young and your ex-husbands are being totally ridiculous, as far as, you know, their behavior or what they're mm-hmm. doing with the kids or lacking support, you know, it's easy to be angry, you know, especially mm-hmm. when you have little children and you're now overwhelmed.
Absolutely.
So
I
think that you and I are different places. You know, mm-hmm. our kids are grown. It's
mm-hmm.
easier for us to move ahead. But when you're
absolutely.
Dragged into it day in and day out, so I do understand what their pain is, too.
Yeah, and I do not understand that, and I can't imagine. I cannot imagine facing that with young children. So,
I had a woman write to me, and my heart goes out to her so much. She lives in another country, I won't say which. She wrote to me yesterday. She was left with 8 children, and 3 of them are handicapped, and she's all on her own.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, how do you cope with that?
Goodness.
You know, so a lot of people have situations that are just very overwhelming.
Yeah.
And they feel like they're buckling. They just don't have support or help.
Right.
And you know what? There are some wonderful gay fathers out there, so I don't want to leave this on a negative note.
Right.
Because, you know, it is June. It's coming up. And, you know, I do like to highlight there are men who are responsible and to do the right thing. I have a good mm-hmm. friend in another country also, Mark, who's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some other men who really have stepped up to the plate and take responsibility and help out.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
you know, who really were in bad binds. They married with good intentions, but things didn't work out. And at least they're being honest about it. They're not lying.
Mm-hmm.
They're telling their wives the truth. You know,
mm-hmm.
like I say, those are the kinds of situations you can deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But even like tonight when one of the women was talking about, you know, she tried to ask her husband just to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And his response to her was, well, the only reason why I was doing these things is because you couldn't be supportive enough to me. That's why I had to turn to men or to gay porno. I mean, it's really hard.
I know.
You know, when you're dealing with this constantly, with them lying about it and blaming you. If you were different, I wouldn't have had to be this way.
Right.
You know, they just don't take responsibility at all.
Right. And I, you know, mine today, he thinks he went in the closet. And, you know, he never wants that arrest thing. I think he locked the key and, you know, he's never going to come out. And I've had to accept that he just thinks nothing happened now in his mind. It's just all gone. Nothing ever happened. And, you know, I just don't live with you anymore. That's all the only difference.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very lucky in a lot of ways that I did not have to go. And I know how bad my pain was, and I didn't have all those other issues. So please don't. I don't want people to think that I'm coming off that, you know, this is a walk in the park. Because I know it's not.
It's going to take time.
It takes
time. But that's what we're there for.
A lot of it is just you have to walk through the muck and find whatever's going to work for you to cope as best you can. And I think it's wonderful that you have that venting and, and it's amazing how people just jump right in to give that support. But unfortunately, nobody can walk the walk for you. You know, that's what I wish
exactly.
I could do.
Exactly, we can work alongside of you.
Exactly,
and
we can hold your hand. Absolutely, hold your hand. Absolutely.
You know, Wendy, you've been such a great support to so many women.
It's the least I can do for the help that I've received, you know.
Yes, and that's the whole thing. Keep giving support. You know, when you give support, you only get support back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel bad because there's always so much to say with you and so little time it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, like I say, another whole group of words that you put together. Wendy's my best wordsmith. I call you the wordsmith, the word master,
new term
the word meister, the straight wife word meister. But of your difficult losses and helpful losses, helpful gains, difficult gains. So if you don't mind, Wendy, maybe we can schedule you to come back in July.
Okay.
You know, while you have some time in the summer before school starts all over again. And,
yeah,
you know, we'll go through those lists.
That there are things that are easy to lose and hard to lose and easy to gain and hard to gain. Yeah, and that helped me sort that out.
And don't forget under helpful gains, you have new friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
Well,
wonderful.
Wendy, I want to thank you so much. I know I've taken up a lot more of your time than I committed to.
That is quite all right.
Can't help myself.
Quite all right. That is quite all right. My pleasure.
And we want to send love to all of our women.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, mention to you again, we have lots of support available. We have our Healing Weekend coming up in Philadelphia in September. And I know that some of our Houston ladies will be coming to that.
That'll
as well
great.
As women from all over the place, including Canada, and even maybe England and Australia. So we're really excited about that. Yep, they're coming from all over. And also I wanted to mention that if you need support, we have our support chat 3 times a week, which is our venting room. Everything you say in there stays in there. You know what they say? What goes on in the chat room stays in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have our, you know, other forms of support, my monthly newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow night I have my UK chat with our women from the United Kingdom.
Wonderful.
That is wonderful. We've had some wonderful new friendships develop there, which is just amazing because those women really felt isolated and alone too.
Mm-hmm.
So if
mm-hmm.
you're from Ireland or from, you know, London or anywhere in the UK, Wales, you're more than welcome to join me. Just write me at bonk@aol.com. And Wednesday night, I love my chat with my adult children of gay fathers. It's always just so amazing.
Yes, that's so wonderful.
Amazing what these young people are, you know, going through and supporting each other with and learning from each other and their emotional impact. So if you have a child 18 and over who would like to join our chat for that, anywhere we have women who are in their late 30s, early 40s, and their, you know, 20s at all ages, but sharing their experiences also. The important thing is to always know that you're not alone. There's always support. If any of you would like any of Wendy's lists, and Once again, Debbie mentioned she loved your spiraling up one.
Good.
She thought it was just so inspiration.
Good.
So I'm going to send that to Debbie. But if any of you would like any of Wendy's lists, just write to me at bonk@aol.com. And Wendy, thank you so much again.
Wow.
And I'll be back with you in July.
Bonnie, thanks to you. And, you know, just it's a tragedy that this is happening, but it is a blessing that you are here for all of us, I'm telling you.
Thanks.
It's just wonderful.
It's a blessing to me that all of you
just
are here.
Wonderful.
Look how rich my life is because of all of you.
Yes.
And I mean that with all my heart.
Yes.
You keep me going and inspired.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I love you, Wendy.
Okay.
And love
thanks
to all of
to
our
you.
Women. Have a great
thank
week.
You.
And we'll talk to you next week. Right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night.